Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 7. 1 Corinthians chapter 7. And for the regulars, you know that we've been going through the book of 1 Corinthians chapter by chapter and section by section. And we've been in this long chapter, the longest chapter. No, maybe the 15th chapter is the longest. Let's say this long chapter in 1 Corinthians 7. And it's all to do with marriage and with issues related to marriage. And the section here before us is addressed especially to young men and young women who are perhaps contemplating marriage. And so maybe you think, well, I can switch off. It doesn't apply to me because I'm well past that age and stage of life. And yes, you are, many of you, but not all of you. But yet I think there's principles here which are applicable to every one of us. So let's give attention to the reading of the word. 1 Corinthians chapter 7 at verse number 25. Now about virgins, I have no command from the Lord, but I give a judgment as one who by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. Because of the present crisis, I think that it is good for you to remain as you are. Are you married? Do not seek a divorce. Are you unmarried? Do not look for a wife. But if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. But those who marry will face many troubles in this life. And I want to spare you this. What I mean, brothers, is that the time is short. From now on, those who have no wives should live as if they had none. Those who mourn, as if they did not. Those who are happy, as if they were not. Those who buy something, as if it were not theirs to keep. Those who use the things of the world, as if not engrossed in them. For this world in its present form is passing away. I would like you to be free from concern. An unmarried man is concerned about the Lord's affairs, how he can please the Lord. But a married man is concerned about the affairs of this world, how he can please his wife, and his interests are divided. An unmarried woman or virgin is concerned about the Lord's affairs. Her aim is to be devoted to the Lord in both body and spirit. But a married woman is concerned about the affairs of this world, how she can please her husband. I am saying this for your own good, not to restrict you, but that you may live in a right way in undivided devotion to the Lord. If anyone thinks he's acting improperly towards the virgin he's engaged to, and if she's getting on in years, and he feels he ought to marry, he should do as he wants. He's not sinning. They should get married. But the man who has settled the matter in his own mind, who is under no compulsion but has control over his own will, and who has made up his mind not to marry the virgin, this man also does the right thing. So then, he who marries the virgin does right. But he who does not marry her does even better. A woman is bound to her husband as long as he lives. But if her husband dies, she is free to marry anyone she wishes, but he must belong to the Lord. In my judgment, she is happier if she stays as she is, and I think that I too have the Spirit of God. So this is the portion, with the Lord's help, we're going to look at this morning. It's a difficult portion, and if you were to consult some of the more technical commentaries, they would alert you to some of the difficulties of interpretation and even of the text. But we will blissfully ignore all those this morning, but be assured I have consulted them I am aware of them, but just because I present this this interpretation doesn't necessarily mean that I'm right on everything. I'm usually confident in what I say in dividing the word, but as one commentator says, even he offers these comments hesitatingly. And so, in other words, there are difficulties, but I don't want you to be blinded by the difficulties, because there's lots of things here that's very, very clear and very challenging. So the subject this morning basically is to marry or not to marry. That's the question. To remain single or get married. So that's the issue here from verse 25 that the Apostle Paul is addressing. And remember, from chapter 7 to the end of the book, the Apostle Paul is basically answering questions that the Corinthians had sent to Paul, and they were seeking an answer from the apostle. So this was one of those particular issues that the apostle now sits down to write about. And so think about, let's say, a young girl in the church in Corinth, and she's engaged. Should she go through with the marriage or call it off? Now, such a question to us today seems even absurd. Of course, if she's engaged, she should get married. But it wasn't so simple if you were an engaged girl in the church in Corinth, because there were some of the so-called super spiritual members in the church who were trying to discourage that young girl to get married. And they were encouraging her to break it off, because marriage is unspiritual. Marriage is worldly, and for reasons like that we've explained previously. And so that was the kind of pressure, therefore, that a young engaged girl or even a young engaged man was under from certain people in the church, people who thought themselves very spiritual and very mature. So what is the Apostle Paul's response? Look at verse 25. He says, I have no command from the Lord, but I give a judgment as one who by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. What does he mean by that? He is simply saying, well, this is an issue that the Lord Jesus never addressed directly while he was on earth. In other words, I have nothing directly to quote from the lips of Jesus on this matter. However, he says, I give a judgment as one who by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. So he offers his counsel. He gives his opinion. So is this opinion just a personal, private opinion? Just the opinion of Paul? No. This opinion is Paul's inspired opinion. It's his trustworthy opinion. It's his inspired counsel. And we need to understand, and I hope we'll see this more clearly as we proceed, that these opinions, this counsel that Paul is here offering, it's not a command. It's not binding on everyone, everywhere, for all time, but his counsel here is very specific. It's for this time, in this place, in these circumstances. In other words, we should be very careful how we use this chapter. This chapter, for example, should not be used to build a doctrine of compulsory celibacy in the church. There are those who, basing their practice on this chapter, say, well, look what Paul says, singleness is better, and so therefore we should insist that our church leaders should be celibate. And we all know of at least one church that has imposed that rule, And we all know of the poisonous reward that they have reaped as a result. So I'm simply saying we need to be very careful and pay attention to the context of everything that Paul here says. And so Paul says in verse 26, because of the present crisis, I think that it is good for you to remain as you are. Remain as you are. And you'll remember that this is a phrase that recurs in the chapter, I don't know how many times. This is Paul's counsel, by and large, stay as you are. Don't change your situation or your status. If you're single, remain single. If you're married, remain married. Don't even think of a separation or a divorce. So that's his personal preference. Remain as you are. Taking everything into consideration, that's what he thinks members should do. If single, remain single. If engaged to be married, proceed with that marriage. Don't break it off. And then he says in verse 28, but if you do marry, you haven't sinned. And if a virgin marries, she is not sinned. So marriage is not merely okay, but marriage is perfectly good, says the apostle. And so we would come to the wrong conclusion altogether if after reading this chapter and we got the impression that Paul was against marriage. He's not. He's for, 100% for marriage. He's also 100% for singleness too, if that is the gift that God has given to that individual. So it's not setting one against the other. It's recognizing what God's gift is. But here, as he answers this particular issue, this particular problem in the church in Corinth, he's saying, this is my preference. Don't be changing your present situation. But if he has a preference, it would be that you remain single. He says that in verse 28. He says that in verse 38. So then he who marries the virgin does right, but he who does not marry does even better. And then he also says it again in verse 40. In my judgment, she, that is the widow, is happier if she remains single. So Paul has this personal preference for singleness as opposed to marriage. So why had he this preference? Was he a misogynist, a woman hater? Was it because he was a crusty, cranky old bachelor? Was it because he was somehow against sex and marriage? Not at all. Indeed, if Paul was opposed to marriage, he would be contradicting the whole of the Bible's teaching from Genesis 1 and 2, how God formed marriage to begin with. It was not good for man to be alone, so God made for him a companion, a helper. And God pronounced it good, indeed very good. So God made marriage in the beginning. Proverbs 18:22 says, marriage is to be, Proverbs 18:22 says, blessed are those. He who finds a wife finds a good thing and finds favor from the Lord. And also, if Paul was saying in this chapter that marriage was bad, he would be contradicting everything else that he has written elsewhere in his letters. For example, in 1 Timothy 3, verse 2, he says, regarding qualification of elders, they should have one wife. In other words, they should be married. If they are married, just one wife. That's not disqualifying a single man, by the way. But elders should be, if they're married, have one wife. And as counsel to younger women in 1 Timothy 5, 14, he says, I want younger women to marry and have children. So in other words, the Apostle Paul can't therefore be against marriage. Remember also in Ephesians 5, he compares the relationship of marriage to the relationship of Christ and his church. The Apostle John does that as well in Revelation 19. Blessed are those who are invited to the marriage feast of the Lamb. And so marriage, the relationship between a man and a woman, is compared to the greatest relationship of all between Christ and his church. So the point I'm simply making is the whole of the Bible's teaching commends marriage. Therefore, it would be very, very strange if in this chapter Paul was somehow contradicting what the rest of the Bible clearly teaches. So let's come and look more closely at this passage. And notice, first of all, the context that should be recognized. Because if ever verses had to be considered in context, these verses surely must. So just as the estate agent's logo is location, 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 the preacher and Bible reader's logo must be context, context, context. What does the overall passage say? What's the context of the paragraph? Well, why does Paul say he prefers singleness? Context, context, context. Look first of all at verse 26. He says, because of the present crisis, I think it's good for you to remain as you are. That is, remain single. Because of this present crisis. And it'd be wonderful if we knew exactly what Paul was referring to. What was this present crisis? But we don't. We don't. But it must have been unusually difficult circumstances at this particular time in Corinth. Some suggest it was almost famine conditions. In the early 50s, there was a severe shortage of grain. Food was scarce. The poor people especially felt the pinch, and most of the members in Corinth were poor. It was a time of great distress. Not therefore a great time to be thinking of getting married and starting a family. Economically, times were tough. So that could be one explanation of the present crisis. Others suggest Paul's referring to the persecution which had begun against the church, and Paul himself, when he was in nearby Ephesus, he experienced persecution. And so perhaps this present crisis is a reference to the persecution which we in hindsight know was only going to increase and things were going to get worse. And so if that's what Paul meant by the present crisis, he's saying, well, I would prefer you remain single instead of contemplating taking the responsibility of a husband or a wife and bringing children into a world in such conditions. So that context, that this present crisis, has to be considered in Paul's counsel. And then also another significant statement he makes is in verse 29. He says, what I mean, brothers, is that the time is short. The time is short. What does Paul mean by that phrase? You could translate it, the time is limited, or the time has been shortened. Again, we don't know precisely what Paul meant. It's perhaps a reference to the brevity of life and the certainty of death. And certainly it's true that every day that passes shortens the time left for us to live and serve the Lord. Robert Murray McShane in Scotland painted a setting sun on the dial of his watch to remind him of that truth. The time is short and the time is passing. And so a reminder that we just need to be wise in our investment of time and opportunities. And this past week we've been reminded, indeed, of the fact of death. There was that tragic smash on the Old Bar Road, and a very attractive, gifted young 19-year-old's life came to a sudden, abrupt, and cruel end. So life in this world, it's very uncertain. And death comes to the old, but it may also come to the young as well. Time is short. So Paul may be referring to that. There also could be a reference to the fact that we know that in the church at Corinth in this time, there were many who had died. We read in 1 Corinthians 11, remember those verses, we always read at communion. And the Lord's table was being abused. There were those who were not examining themselves. And the Lord brought judgment upon the church. And as a result, many had died under the judgment hand of God. And so Paul could be hinting at that. I don't know. But all I'm saying is, when we're considering Paul's counsel here, my preference is remain single. If you're single, remain that way because of the present crisis. Because the time is short. And then also another context, another consideration should be considered. What he says there at the end of verse 31. He says, for this world in its present form is passing away. This world is only temporary. It's only passing. This world is not our home. We're just a passing through. And so there's nothing permanent about this world of ours. It's just like a stage set for a play or a movie. And then as soon as it's finished, then the stage is cleared. And that's what our world is like. The Apostle John makes comment upon this world. 1 John chapter 2, verse 15, he says, do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And John says, and the world is passing away, and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever. So this world has got an expiry date. You go into Coles. You want to buy some yogurt. You look at the expiry date. You want to get some biscuits. You look at the expiry date on the packet. You should. And so everything has got an expiry date. And that really is the context the apostle's saying about life here on earth. It's not just true of yogurt and biscuits. It's true of life in its entirety. Because if you look at verses 29 to 31, Paul describes basically all the activities of life. He talks about marriage.